Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. Jamie, what is something that is underrated?
Something underrated, I think, is reading the comments. Everyone always says, don't read the comments. But sometimes I dip my toe into the comments and I get this rush. I was awake 3 hours earlier than I was expecting to be because I just sat up in a cold sweat because I'd read comments the previous night. And I was like, whoa, I'm fully activated. And I walked for 7 miles. So
just aimlessly?
Underrated. No, I knew where I was going.
Okay. I think it's like, and I walked for 7 miles.
And then I just ended up somewhere. Yeah.
And I was in Pacoima.
That's how we met.
Yeah. That is how we met.
That sounds, healthy.
Read the, no.
Well, what happened?
Wait,
yeah. What
comments under what?
Okay. So I do a show on Super Deluxe.
Right.
And never read the comments, but
on
this
YouTube,
was,
never.
No,
yeah.
But sometimes on Facebook, especially they're bad. And sometimes it will just like show up in my feed because I like subscribe to the channel from my Facebook.
Right.
So this one just showed up and then I fell deep into a hot or not debate about me. And it was, I mean, some points were made, some valid points.
Uh-huh.
Some people were nice. Some people think I should see a dentist. It's like there's a lot going on.
Christ.
And I normally wouldn't dip in, but I did this time. And you know what? I don't regret it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, so you interacted or you just read through?
Oh, I love interacting with them. Yeah. I'm just like, thank you, valid point. If anyone wants to give me dental insurance, that'd be fucking tight.
Yeah,
like,
right.
If there's any dentists in the comments, in
right?
The Los
like,
Angeles
is this an
area,
ad for your dental practice?
Yeah. If so, very hurtful. But like, I will show up. So yeah, reading the comments underrated.
I would say never to read the comments, there. Just based on my own experience.
It is a horrifying experience.
My most popular video on YouTube. So the more popular a piece of content or whatever gets, the more likely it is to reach an audience that is not your audience, basically.
The audience that doesn't think you're hot?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I had a video very early on the show I used to do, the spit take, where it was a good premise, you know, what just videos of celebrities while they were unmistakably high or drunk. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. But, you know, my performance wasn't great. It was like the fifth video I'd ever done. And the comments were so mean. It was like I think that one of the top comments was, I just want to punch you in the fucking throat, bro.
Oh my God.
And everyone was like, yep. Yes.
Yeah, thumbs
that
was up the top
to that.
Comment.
It's a debasing experience being on the internet.
It
more
is.
Than being a frequent podcast guest?
Oh, that's true. It's worse. It's definitely for sure worse. And then it's weird because you'll see comments about your friends sometimes and it's like, wow, now I know this mean thing someone thought about you. Do you know? I can't tell you.
Yeah. And I can't bring it up without looking just shady.
No, right.
Like, can you believe what someone said about you?
Right. Yeah. I'm like, people say that you got Cheeto fingers. Like, it's like they're
Cheeto fingers?
Yeah. I can't.
Like
I can't.
Jaundiced and like,
I cannot discuss it
orange?
Further. I cannot discuss
just
it further.
Just some of the yellow
fingers
if you're
look
jaundiced.
Like, have.
Oh, like they're knobby, oh, like a.
I don't.
Oh, yeah.
Don't
Jamie's
know
one friend. Remember they have Cheetos for fingers?
Yeah.
Just like actual Cheetos?
I feel like I'm like calling them out now. My friend who has Cheetos for fingers.
We call her Chris Cheeto.
They are delicious, though.
God bless her.
I have seen.
God bless her Cheeto fingers.
I have seen people, like any creative people who are out there. I would recommend not reading the comments as much as possible. I've seen talented writers kind of lose their way, at least temporarily, because of comments, because it, like, you know, that voice gets in their head and then they like open their next column arguing with a voice in their head that represents the comments for like a page. And it's just like, that's not.
It's just a terrible way to live. You want to live from your inside and exude outwardly. You don't want external things to begin affecting you internally. And I think you begin to betray yourself because if you live by the comments and you get gassed up when people big you up, you're like, oh, yes, I'm feeling good. You will also die just as bad from the bad comments.
Yeah, you got your hot days and your not days.
Just believe in yourself.
There, well, I would clarify reading the comments. I wouldn't do it on purpose, but if you come across them by accident when you're just innocently scrolling through your own damn feed, just trying to, I was literally looking for people who were sad that the Patriots lost to make myself feel good because I like when people from my home state are upset. And then I instant karma came across the hot or not discussion. See? So when you see it, make the best of it.
Make the best of it.
You found one of us, by the way. I am a Patriots fan. A self-loathing one.
Really?
So, yeah. The Super Bowl was yesterday. And
hey, you had a good party. You had a good
Did. We had a good party over at my house.
I'm sorry,
it was a lot of fun.
The Zeit Cave.
Whatever, Jamie.
We were recording.
Go do your Bechdel cast.
We did.
Whatever.
We did.
Oh, I was recording. you were missed, but it was a lot of fun. And another good game. I feel like there's been a pretty great run of Super Bowls for the past, I don't know, handful of years. Or Super Bowls with that feature the Patriots have been really good games the past three times. But they lost this time, as I knew they would. Nick Foles was great and won't be the starting quarterback for the Eagles next year. And there are rumors that this would be the last year of the Patriots dynasty. So think of the boys, guys.
Think of the fucking guys. Don't be reckless tonight, guys.
They don't want that.
The guys wouldn't want that.
But yeah, the rumor is that Belichick might leave because Brady made them trade away Jimmy Garoppolo. Not Janine Garofalo, as I just wanted to say.
Oh, that got a bigger laugh than it deserved. I really liked it.
Someone photoshopped that.
Yeah, but also they could make Tom happy. So we'll see about that. Ratings were down. I know people who skipped it because they didn't want to watch a sport that is, you know, complicit in giving people CTE. And then I know of a bunch of people who skipped it because they feel like, you know, NFL players were disrespecting the troops.
And then you have people who don't watch it because they feel like the NFL is disrespecting those people's right to protest.
Right. Exactly.
That sounds like a little conflicting because, like, I just don't generally care about the NFL. And, like, this year kind of made solidified why I don't really watch.
Right.
So I don't know. It's like it was hard to kick the tradition of doing something on Super Bowl Sunday. I think that's what I found myself in that place.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to create a new tradition. Well, on Super Bowl Sunday, everybody gets together and just watches, you know, The Simpsons or something.
Oh, that sounds really nice.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be
And
fun.
You can still eat and drink or whatever, but just don't watch the fucking Super Bowl.
Just don't watch the Super Bowl. Yeah. I had a great time. My co-host Caitlin and I went to a cantina last night.
Ooh.
Totally empty. We got like half-price margaritas because no one was there. And they were just like, oh, did you watch the game? We're like, nope. They're like, are you 18? And we're like,
what?
Yes. And then we got half-price margarita.
Because you were 18?
No, well, Caitlin was like, I'm 31. I was like, I'm 18.
All right, half-price for you, not the old lady.
But yeah, I mean, there was a hit during the game. Cooks, a Patriots receiver, caught a ball and then did like this weird like cartoon character like circle and then ran and like
got blindsided.
Yeah, just completely knocked out. And that was a point where everybody, I think, laughed at first because it looked silly, and then we're like, oh wow, he could be dead. Like that's legitimate. Like he did the same sort of hand thing that Uma Thurman does, actually, in that car crash video.
Sort of like a fencing response.
Yeah, where your hand just like kind of goes up because you're so knocked out. You just kind of go back to fetal position.
Brutal.
Yeah, so that was the game. Congratulations to the city of Philadelphia. We'll
Guys,
get it.
Quick update. I did just send Steven Zaslow a request for $50 on the Cash App, and we'll see what he says.
We'll see how swole that bank account is.
I put the caption as making me sad. So let's see if he pays me $50 for making
swole
me
swole sauce is just like a word for steroids, right?
We are all swole sauce.
Yeah. Right. I'm just saying, if like, I guess when people add sauce to the end, like, yo, I'm swag, I'm swole sauce or right. something. I don't know if that's what he means, or he just, he mixes like steroids with his ragu and eats pasta like that.
All I know is it's time to make Steven Swole Sauce Zaza's life hell. Right. Until he gives me $50. That I feel sure of. I'm in like a Kill Bill mood.
Yeah. Well, let's wait. We'll see. By the end, I have a feeling we'll have some kind of outcome.
Yeah, for sure.
Justin Timberlake was the halftime show. A lot of fun in the room while watching it. Lacey Mosley.
She's having
favorite.
A great time.
Yeah, was having a great time.
Edgar having a great Mompless time.
Here. Yeah. Some great
Tree's having a great time.
Videos of them dancing Tree's on Instagram.
I saw them.
You should check out.
It was very fun in the room because I feel like everyone was like just, you know, having a good time and
Teresa
like there was
good,
music.
Teresa had a good Insta story of one half of the room not loving it and the other half of the room, mainly half. Edgar, loving it.
It was, I don't know. Apparently there were sound issues, which...
Yeah.
I couldn't tell in the
I
room.
Watched because afterwards I was like, I don't know if I actually really watched it. I was just kind of like having fun at the time and like there just happened to be Justin Timberlake sound on.
Right.
And then like, yeah, when you watched it back, like the sound was bad and it was actually really underwhelming. Like when you really think about when you compare to like the halftime show of like Beyonce or like even Katy Perry, we've talked about that one, or Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
This was like really
It was like, a bummer.
Yeah, it was not fun.
It was a bummer. And I've liked Justin Timberlake. Like there, I have nothing against him. I do have things against him, but I liked Future Sex Love Sounds Forever. I don't know.
Yeah, didn't we all?
Are we done? Are we done with him?
I don't know if we're done with him. I mean,
we'll never be done with him.
People will never be done with him. But yeah, I mean, look, he still did Janet dirty. I was still pissed that Janet did not pop out and bring balance to the universe and pull his penis out.
Right.
But, you know, there's still time for that. And he still hasn't, you know, addressed that whole thing.
Right.
But
right.
aside from that, the Prince cover or the duet he did was also weird, too, because, like, it's I Would Die For You. Like, you want to have a song with the title Die in it when you're talking about
Prince. Also someone who like historically did not like him. Like why?
Right. Yeah, so I didn't realize they had an actual beef like when Prince was alive that you know, Prince at an after show performance, like not an official concert, but like just after the Emmys performance or something, or the Grammys performance was like, by the way, for people saying they're bringing sexy back, sexy never left. And Justin Timberlake was like, fuck that. Nobody says sexy never left about me. And then like started,
he's
like,
getting a little swole sauce about it.
Yeah. Got real swole sauce about it. And like had a lyric in, the song Give It To Me where he was like, now it's sexy never left. Then why is everybody on my shit?
Wait,
it?
I remember that
don't
was
hate
shit,
on me
it,
just
it.
Because mm-hmm. you didn't come up with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was about Prince.
That was about Prince.
I didn't
and then,
realize that.
And then he made fun of Prince being short at the 2007 Golden Globes. Prince won for The Song of the Heart from Happy Feet. And he wasn't at the ceremony. So Timberlake, who was just presenting the award, was like, I guess I'll accept it on his behalf, but like ducked down to like a tiny stance at the mm-hmm. microphone to be like,
wow,
get
bitch.
It because Prince is short.
Yo, JT, don't fuck around, bro. You will not win that. You will not. A dead Prince will beat you.
Yeah.
Every time.
Every single time.
Also an alive Prince.
Yeah, exactly. Dirt. But even now, posthumously, you can't win against this man.
Right.
Because the funny thing is, you know, he was saying like there might be a hologram and shit, and everyone was like, do not do that.
No.
And then they just did like a whack ass big sheet or whatever. But it's funny because even like Prince has been on record even when he was alive saying like holographic depictions of dead people is quote demonic.
Right.
So he's like, I want nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
And so I guess the sheet is cool, but it was again.
I mean, the sheet was a reference back to his Prince's halftime show. Do you remember that halftime show where like his silhouette of him just like shredding the guitar was, That was actually one of the great halftime shows.
Yeah.
There was a reference to that in the first concert I ever saw. Obviously, I didn't know at the time, but I saw.
I guess it was Prince.
I saw Cisco open for the Backstreet Boys.
Nice.
There you go.
On September 10th, 2001.
Wow.
True story. Boston, Massachusetts. And Cisco did the sheet thing and like paid you know, homage to Prince for a bunch of, you know, 9-year-old girls.
Right.
Wow. Well,
and
about thongs.
Yeah. And he sang about thongs to the children. Mm-hmm. And we loved it. My mom was like, let's get this guy's autograph. Which we did.
You did?
Yeah, I got this guy's autograph.
There's nothing more pre-9/11 than a Cisco Backstreet Boys concert.
It's truly the down to the wire on that.
There's no amount of money I would pay to just be in the world in that moment.
Speaking to the white trashiness of it all, to my mom and I, we made signs for the Backstreet Boys, and this is when one of the Backstreet Boys had just gotten out of rehab, and so we made a sign that was just like 3 days sober AJ, and like held it up. And
nice, AJ,
good for AJ. I hope he's still sober. Well. Is he still alive? We don't know.
No clue.
I think he is.
Did Howie have issues too?
No, Howie was the sensitive one.
Oh, he was? Okay. Yeah. Just making sure.
But maybe he was troubled.
I always get him and Howie mixed up.
Yeah. AJ's the bad boy.
Okay. Howie's alive?
Howie, super producer Anna Hosnier has informed us that Howie alive.
Life status update, Howie alive.
AJ?
Alive. Alive.
Sober? We don't know. I wanted to ask you, do you have any predictions, things you think we're not aware that we should be taking seriously right now that maybe we should be?
Well, I have a whole idea of where our next three wars are going to happen, or at least our next three military interventions. Trump has a long history of when people bring up human rights, he's just like, whatever, we abuse human rights too.
Right.
So then whenever the Trump administration comes out and is concerned about human rights, it's always a red flag. The three places they've talked about being concerned about human rights are Venezuela, South Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. And Rex Tillerson used to be the CEO of Exxon in Venezuela at a time when they nationalized all their oil and basically took that company from him. He went to court and sued and like got a settlement that wasn't what he was looking for. And he's had a grudge ever since. Now he's our Secretary of State.
Yeah, right.
Right.
And around April of last year, these stories started coming out about Trump being concerned about human rights in Venezuela. And I'm like, oh, yeah, well, we're going to go to war in Venezuela pretty soon. And sure enough, just this last week, Rex Tillerson, he's kind of floating the idea that, hey, maybe a coup will happen in Venezuela.
Maybe the military will step in.
And once any representative of the U.S. government starts talking that way, it's bad times for that country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, we're either going to go in or someone's going to go in and we're going to give them a lot of support.
Yeah.
And I think it's all tied to natural resources and oil.
Right. I mean, I know that Venezuela has a lot of oil, right? That was sort of the whole issue, is that Hugo Chavez like nationalized their oil and we didn't like that because they sold us a lot of oil.
Yeah, I get the sense they knew they had more oil than we realized before we knew it.
Right.
Because we didn't find out until 2014 that they have actually the biggest reserves of oil in the world, even more than any country in the Middle East.
Oh, wow.
Hashtag oil boys.
Yeah. And in 2015, not long after we found that out, Obama all of a sudden issued this executive order calling them an enemy of the state. And basically what that means is any country that does trade deals with us cannot trade with Venezuela. And what it did is it blocked Japan from doing this big gold deal with Venezuela that would have bailed their economy out. But once we put that executive order in place, Japan couldn't do anything. So we've been kind of waging, if you look into, it would take an hour to go through it all, but if you look into it, we've been kind of waging economic war with Venezuela
for almost
3 years now.
And it's been pretty devastating. I mean, we, back at Cracked, we had this section, the personal experience section of the site, where we would just like interview people with interesting or extreme life experiences. And a couple of the craziest stories we ever heard were from people in Venezuela who, like there was a guy who, it had gotten so bad and hunger had gotten so bad, like all the grocery store shelves were just barren. And he was having to fight off looters with a crossbow because he had a mango tree in his yard and they were all coming for the mangoes. And that was the only way he was feeding his family.
Yeah. It's inflation is a thing we hear about all the time. And it's like, it's been a long time since we've had really high inflation in this country. So it's hard to wrap your head around, but in Venezuela, inflation got so bad that basically if you were making the equivalent of $100,000 in the United States, overnight you were making like $10,000 a year.
Right.
Like your money just became worthless overnight. And it's not our fault, but the things Venezuela did that made it happen, we've kind of seized on and are exacerbating it to, I think, go in and put a government in place that's a little more
friendly to
our needs.
Yeah. I mean, because the human rights abuses that we hear about are North Korea and Iran, right? And those
right.
are the
that
places.
That was in the State of the Union.
Was in the State of the Union. Those are the places that get all the attention as, you know, that watch out, America's going to go to war there.
Right.
And you're saying that these three other countries are also quietly being.
There's a CNN article. If you just search Nikki Haley, Trump, South Sudan, and you'll find this opinion piece she wrote for CNN, which is weird because that's like their boogeyman, basically. That's all where all fake news emanates from.
Right.
But Nikki Haley was writing this opinion piece about why we need to go to South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo and fix these human rights abuses. And if you look, you can actually pull up a list of conflicts happening in Africa right now. And yes, those places, there are bad things happening, but they're way, way, way down the list in terms of countries that need humanitarian help.
Right.
But what they are both are, they're both really resource-rich countries that China is working with to set up a – basically set up their own oil market that would not be backed by the U.S. dollar, as all oil markets are right now. And it would basically cut us out of the foreign oil market, which would destroy our economy.
Yeah.
And – even like it's such a high level thing, they can't like the government's never going to come out and go, okay, here's why we need to go to war in South Sudan.
Right.
Right.
Like people are just going to be like, shut up. We don't need that oil.
Right.
But we kind of do.
Right.
Like,
right.
It depends on what kind of lifestyle you want to have in the United States.
Right.
And sometimes I feel like Trump is just the best way to sell these crazy military excursions we're going to have to go on. Because then you can just be like, he's crazy. We don't know what he's doing.
Right.
But with someone like Hillary Clinton in place, it'd be like, well, no, she's not crazy. We have to explain that a little more.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, isn't it possible that some of these military campaigns will just happen without us noticing? Like, I feel like a lot of, military action was happening in Africa that we didn't know about until a handful of troops were killed over there. And then people were like, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Oh, we're in Africa.
Yeah. When that, I think a lot of people were like, whoa, why are we in Africa though?
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting to just see, like, before all of our meddling in South America, previously was to like curb communism.
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, now we gotta get the jump on China so we're not fucking up the whole oil futures and shit. So it's interesting to see this whole pattern play out with sort of the same tactics and things like that.
Right.
But now with just different stakes.
Yeah, it almost feels like an alien invasion kind of thing where they don't wanna tell us that's what we're fighting. Because if we lose, it's gonna be a whole different country.
Right.
If we lose that economic standing in the world, it's going to be a radically different place to live. And I don't know if Americans are ready to hear that.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I'd rather hear there was an asteroid coming than I might not be able to afford a Blu-ray player if a new one comes out next year.
Right. Just kill me now.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, right away.
Yeah. If you told them, like a number one at McDonald's would now be $78.
Right.
Ooh. Yeah. It's not a world I want to live in.
All right. We are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. And we're back. We wanted to talk about some people who made a bunch of money off of cryptocurrency and went down to Puerto Rico. It's basically like if somebody wrote a satire of late stage capitalism, like they couldn't do any better than this. So all these dudes who are like in their 30s and then there's like one guy in his 50s, all like decided they were going to take all their earnings off of cryptocurrency and like they have, you know, billions of dollars of cryptocurrency, some of them, and they're moving the money from the Caymans, which is what you use as a tax shelter before, they're moving it over to Puerto Rico. And this is something we've talked about before, a thing called disaster capitalism, where, you know, capitalists come in after a disaster and basically like privatize things. And we've talked about how there are people who are privatizing Puerto Rico's
their power company, National Power Company.
Yeah, Power Grid. By the way, 40% still don't have power in Puerto Rico. I love laughing at that. So these guys have decided they're going to create a crypto utopia where it's like this society that's run by this guy. His name is Brock Pierce. He's sort of the leader.
He sounds
dope. His name is Brock.
The Portopia movement. A former child actor who has been sued for fraud multiple times. Like, clearly a con man. But let's listen to the description of these guys, because this New York Times reporter went down there. So the leader of the Portopia movement emerged, Brock Pierce, wearing drop crotch capri pants, a black vest that almost hit his knees, and a large black felt hat. There's other guys. One guy's wearing two-tone aviators, and another guy is wearing a smartphone on a necklace. So they're just
What are fucking two-tone aviators?
The ones that, like, gradient.
There's, like, a gradient?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so he's in the CIA.
Yeah, right. He's a spook, for sure. Yeah, right. And he's got a cell phone necklace?
Cell phone, yeah, smartphone on a necklace.
I like how they simultaneously straddle nerdy dad with, like, out-of-touch dude who just, like, went to a hip store to buy clothes or something.
Yeah, it's just they're transported from Silicon Valley, but they say things like, we're benevolent capitalists building a benevolent economy. Mr. Pierce got into digital money early as a professional gamer, mining and trading gold in the video game World of Warcraft, an effort funded partly by...
Steve Bannon!
Yay!
And he's a controversial figure. Like I said, he has been sued for fraud, among other things.
Oh, also, I just had to pull up his acting career. He played young Gordon Bombay in The Mighty Ducks.
Okay. Oh, shit.
So just think about that.
Damn!
He was also Luke Davenport in First Kid. Is that the one with Sinbad?
I don't know.
It is. That's what I remember. Sinbad is like Secret Service agent. Anyway, that's a whole other thing.
Luke Davenport. Is he the first kid? I wonder. President Davenport, your son is out of hand.
Yeah, he is.
He is?
He is.
He's the main kid. Yes. So the kid from First Kid.
The first kid.
Of course he's got government connections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So here's a quote from them. He said he is aiming to create a charitable token called One with $1 billion of his own money.
Wow.
And now I want you
comes.
To now get ready to have your fucking mind blown.
So
you
this
guys.
Is, it's called One.
One. Okay. Now he
like,
says,
like you won something or O-N-E?
No, O-N-E.
Okay.
And he says, if you take the my out of money, you're left with one.
Don't be
Thank
that way,
you.
Brock.
And if you look at one, it means you're on E.
Then somebody about him immediately, he's tuned into a higher calling. Said Kai Nygaard, scion of the Canadian clothing company Nygaard and a crypto investor. Quote, he's beyond money.
Dude, is this a fucking Christopher Guest mockumentary?
It's amazing.
That guy's starting a cult for
yeah.
sure.
Oh, yeah. They've taken over a like abandoned hotel, and they're all living in a hotel that like was just a building that happened to not be touched by the hurricane.
So of course you want to put the
somehow they
cryptocurrency
got that building,
investors
right.
in
while
there.
People are living in fucking shanties and shit.
Exactly.
Fuck out of here.
Now this is maybe the most telling quote. Next we hear from a gentleman named Halsey Miner. Who
is that a gamer tag for Xbox?
He's the founder of the news site CNET, which is a very useful website. And he is moving his new blockchain company, VideoCoin, from the Cayman Islands to Puerto Rico this winter. He says, referring to what's happened here, he says, what's happened here is a perfect storm. Referring to Hurricane Maria and the investment interest that has followed, he added, while it was really bad for the people of Puerto Rico, in the long term, it's a godsend if people look past that. So,
man, perfect storm is such an awful phrase to use in that context.
Yeah. And then,
wow,
bad for the people of Puerto Rico. But when you think about it, cryptocurrency is
just
really
look past that. Just look past the humanity of it all.
Yeah.
And think about the sick ass video coin, baby.
Right.
Yeah. Katrina was bad, but we'll have so many casinos there someday. Yeah.
Man, Cryptopia. I thought it was a place for Crips to hang out. I didn't realize it, that's what
Cryptopia
they were going with.
Would be.
We're in Cryptopia.
Yeah.
We have to get into this Quincy Jones interview.
Yes.
He went, as the headline on our doc here says, he went in.
He goes in on many topics.
Yeah. So this Miles, you're going to just take us
I'm just going to read
please
you
do,
through
I
some
haven't
of the
read
best
it.
Moments. So yeah, he's got a, he's about to turn 85. There's a Netflix documentary, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter.
There's a Netflix documentary coming?
Yes. He's in, this article says he's in the midst of a victory lap ahead of his turning 85 in March, a Netflix documentary and a CBS special hosted by Oprah that are all on the horizon. And we all know Quincy Jones is a prolific music producer. He's worked with the best.
Yeah.
And he has a right to have an opinion on many things because he has seen it all. Mm. He even played, you know, jazz with a fucking Benito Mussolini's son. Okay, so that's even in this article. But let me just go through some of the hotter takes in here. So they go through the usual stuff. They get to Michael Jackson. And they so this is him on Michael Jackson.
Said, he produced Thriller, right?
Yes, a little
known album.
Album. Yes, some people may have heard of it.
I think I have, yeah.
So he says about Michael Jackson, I hate to get into this publicly, but Michael stole a lot of stuff. He stole a lot of songs, like Donna Summer's State of Independence and Billie Jean. The notes don't lie, man. He was as Machiavellian as they come. And he says, they go on. He sort of explains a little more about how he's like always kind of taking sections of song and making his own, which is fine because
which is,
those
that's
songs,
what all musicians
right.
do.
Everything is a remix
heard the
of a
two
remix.
Songs, yeah, they yeah, it sounds like it's the same notes, like he said, but it's
right.
definitely sped up. And I still think Michael Jackson is a genius for remembering that bass line and being like, oh, I'll take that, slow yeah. it down, put it here, and make the greatest pop song of all time.
Exactly. Yeah. And then he said, what about the interviewer asked, what about outside of music? What's misunderstood about Michael? I used to kill him about the plastic surgery, man. He'd always justify it and say it was because of some disease he had. That was bullshit. And then they're like, well, how much were his problems wrapped up with fame? You mean the way he looked? He had a problem with his looks because his father told him he was ugly and abused him. What do you expect? And they're just like, yeah, you know, it's a strange juxtaposition how Michael's music was joyous, but his life seems sadder and more odd as time goes by. And Quincy says, yes, but at the end, Michael's problem was propofol, and that problem affects everyone. Doesn't matter if you're famous. Big Pharma making OxyContin and all that shit is a serious thing. I was around the White House for 8 years with the Clintons, and I learned about how much influence Big Pharma has. It's no joke. What's your sign, man?
What?
Then the interview's like, Pisces? Me too. It's a great sign. Then the interview goes on. You just mentioned the Clintons, yeah. who are your friends of yours. Why is there still such visceral dislike of them? What are other people not seeing in Hillary, for example, that you see? And he goes, it's because there's a side of her. When you keep secrets, they backfire. Interview goes on. Like, what secrets? Man, this is something else I shouldn't be talking about. Interview goes on. Well, you seem to know a lot. I know too much, man.
Well, what's, Quincy?
What's something you wish you didn't know? Who killed Kennedy? And then interview goes on. Who did it? Man, Chicago mobster Sam Giancana. Man, the connection was there between Sinatra and the mafia and Kennedy. Joe Kennedy, man, he was a bad man. He came to Frank to have him talk to Giancana about getting votes in Illinois. And they're like, yes, we've heard this theory before that the mob helped win Illinois for Kennedy in 1960. And he goes on, man, we shouldn't be talking about this publicly. Where are you from? And he's like, Toronto? So that's how the sort of interview is going. Like, he's got a lot of interesting things. Then
he'll just like drop an earth-shattering and this, revelation.
And then immediately and then just, pivot. What's your sign, man?
What's your sign?
Where are you from?
What's that shoe you wear?
So then they go on a little bit later. Then they kind of get to more current events, like sort of the Me Too movement. And he says, well, we've obviously been learning more lately about how corrosive the entertainment industry can be for women. As someone who's worked in the business at the highest levels for so many years, do all the recent revelations come as a surprise? Nah, man. Women had to put up with that fucked up shit. Women and brothers. We're both dealing with the glass ceiling. But what about the alleged behavior of a friend of yours like Bill Cosby? Is it hard to square what he's been accused of with the person you know? It was all of them. Brett Ratner, Weinstein. Weinstein, man, he's a jive motherfucker. wouldn't return my five calls. A bully.
Wouldn't return my five calls?
I don't know. Bro.
And he's a bully?
He called him a jive motherfucker like this is Dolomite or something.
Right.
What about Cosby, though? What about it? Were the allegations a surprise to you? Man, we can't talk about this in public, man. I'm surprised he didn't pivot. That was right, a perfect moment to be like, hey, man, who does your hair? That's not what happens. So then they go into – then they start talking about racism. like, in this modern age and like white nationalism that's popping up. And the interviewer asks, what stirred everything up? Is it all about Trumpism? And Quincy replies, it's Trump and uneducated rednecks, man. Trump is just telling them what they want to hear. I used to hang out with him. He's a crazy motherfucker, limited mentally, a megalomaniac, narcissistic. I can't stand him. I used to date Ivanka, you know.
What? He said he used to date Ivanka?
So obviously the interview goes, wait.
His daughter?
Yes. His daughter says, wait, really? Yes, sir. 12 years ago, Tommy Hilfiger, who was working with my daughter, Kidada, said, quote, Ivanka wants to have dinner with you. I said, no problem. She's a fine motherfucker. She had the most beautiful legs I ever saw in my life. Wrong father, though. Quincy is a fucking fool, man.
What?
What do you think that date was like?
Oh, my God.
I just have to take a second for that one. I still have to process. Would be like, just how he casually be like, you know, I should date Ivanka 12 years ago.
How you're old about is to turn Ivanka? 85? So she's like 22 at the time?
She's like in her early 20s at that time.
Well, no, she's, I think, she's like 37 like or something, like, right? She so 12 years ago, she would have been 25. 12 years ago for an 85-year-old would have been 73.
Oh, my God.
24. Dude. Yeah, she would have been 24. She's
24, and 36. He's 73 at the time if they dated.
Right.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. Look, I don't know what happened with that, but that's just so weird that she was even like.
We need more old people to
Ivanka wants to have dinner with you. So
also entirely possible that she was just like, had a business proposal for him, maybe.
Probably.
He was like, oh, she's trying to get with me.
She's trying to get
it. She's trying to get it.
We know she's Quincy definitely has. He's like kind of a prolific father. You know what I mean? Like,
Because he's Rashida Jones' dad, too, right?
And Kidada. And I think he has women with like, children with like four other women.
Yeah.
So, you know, he gets out there. And so anyway, they move on to the Beatles.
Oh, shit.
Ready for the fuego take? So he says, he talks about Paul Deck. He said, how was it like when you first heard rock? And he said something like, man, it just sounds like white boys trying to do rhythm and blues. He's like, I knew Paul McCartney, who was 21. And then the guy says, what were your first impressions of the Beatles? That they were the worst musicians in the world? They were no playing motherfuckers. Paul was the worst bass player I ever heard. And Ringo, don't even talk about it. I remember once we were in the studio with George Martin, and Ringo had taken 3 hours for a 4-bar thing he was trying to fix on the song. He couldn't get it. We said, mate, why don't you get some lager and lime, some shepherd's pie, and take an hour and a half and relax a little bit. So he did, and we called Ronnie Varell, a jazz drummer. Ronnie came in for 15 minutes and tore it up. Ringo comes back and says, George, can you play it back for me one more time? So George did, and Ringo says, that didn't sound so bad. And I said, yeah, motherfucker, because it ain't you. Great guy, though.
Yo. The pivots in this are like Olajuwon-esque.
Yeah.
His footwork on these pivots are
great.
So good.
They're unbelievable. The way he can just sort of diffuse something so crazy.
Great guy, though.
Quincy Jones just became my favorite person, man.
Then there's one where he talks about Marlon Brando. This is just a funny thing. Where he says, you know, Marlon Brando and I, we used to go cha-cha dancing. And he could dance his ass off. He was the most charming motherfucker you ever met. He'd fuck anything. He'd fuck a mailbox. James Baldwin, Richard Pryor, Marvin Gaye. He slept with them? How do you know that? Come on, man. He did not give a fuck. You like Brazilian music?
He said he fucked Marvin Gaye.
I don't know. I don't know if he was
James Baldwin.
I don't know if he's saying that James Baldwin fucked. Like, are James Baldwin, Richard Pryor, Marvin Gaye were all in that camp?
Like, or would fuck anything?
Like that they would fuck anything? Or that it's hard to know when you're not hearing it. But it's just so funny that he's like, wait, the guy even has to be like, he slept with them, and he's like, come on, man, you didn't give a fuck. You like Brazilian music? Those pivots are just, they're next level. So, I mean, that's just a portion of it. He talks about playing with, like I said, Mussolini's son. The one good thing, which I can't fully like read the quote back, but like he talks about like creatively what was like sort of his X factor. And he's like, you know, do you hear any innovation in music? He's like, nah, man, because a lot of these people are chasing like Ciroc vodka and Fat Farm. Okay, clearly taking shots of P. Diddy and Rose.
Right.
And
also about 10 years late.
Yeah.
Fat Farm.
Fat Farm went out.
Fat Farm is sponsoring everything.
He's like, I love baby fat and apple bottom jeans, though. but he was saying like, you know, the second you chase money, God leaves the room. And you're not going to make that fire music, which I think is a really good piece of advice for anyone who's
never
a creative.
Thought about money when he was making.
Yeah, the second you consider an outside audience and you are just not making art that's true to you, you've lost.
Exactly.
Which was, to me, the most useful thing that I saw.
He also talks about, like, the person's like, would you ever date someone your age? And he was like, ha! Yeah. Yeah, right.
I read something maybe a few days ago. So this is before this interview, or maybe it was something from this interview, that he has 22 girlfriends and they all know about each other.
Right.
Is that right? Is that true?
Yeah, that's something that happened. Maybe that was like a Playboy interview. He's getting interviewed a lot. But yeah, there was he talked about how he had 22 girlfriends all over the world, like one in each country that he visits.
There is he kind of make references to that, because the guy just says the interview asks, okay, let me ask you a left field question. In your memoir, there's a section where you talk about being a dog. And he says, that's not what I was thinking of, but yeah, that's in there. I was thinking it just goes on to this other thing. Like, here, I think thought he was alluding to that.
Right.
Yeah.
You want to hear about the fucking, right?
Yeah. You want to hear about the people I fucked.
No. No, I read your Playboy interview. We got that. But yeah, he talks about how, like, he's never dated a woman. I think they ask, like, what his expiration date is, and he says, like, 30s or Jesus. 40 or something.
This man is insane, stuck dude. In a time warp.
I know.
He also said Cyndi Lauper almost ruined We Are the World with her loud-ass jewelry. and had a blowout with her. Just to show you hit this man's ego, though, one of the questions was, what's something you've worked on that should have been bigger? And he answers, what the fuck are you talking about? I never had that problem. They were all big. So he's like LeVar Ball mixed with Trump.
Yeah,
I mean, this dude, but he earned it. So.
Right.
He earned
it. I mean, LeVar Ball and Trump were super talented.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't earn to be problematic, but he definitely earns the right to talk shit, because, you know, nobody's on fucking Quincy's level.
I guess, like, he waited for a long time to be this unfiltered. So.
Right.
Have at it, man.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you're an octogenarian, you know, as we've seen, you begin to let loose a little bit.
Stop giving any fucks at all. Yeah, man.
So, guys, yes, please check out that. It's a wonderful read.
And the interview is from what magazine?
It was in Vulture.
Vulture.
Shout out to Vulture.
Goddamn. Great interview. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. Let's talk Spirit Airlines, you guys, because they're...
Talk what?
Spirit Airlines.
Oh. Whoa. I'm triggered.
Because we, super producer Anna Hosnier brought a terrifying story to us from the realms of Spirit Airlines, the netherworld
of Spirit Airlines.
When you just walk on there, it's just like logic turns upside down, and just like terrible shit starts to happen.
It actually costs an extra $2 to look at their website.
Right. They had a young woman who was on Spirit Airlines who brought a hamster with her as her emotional support pet. You know, I'm not a huge believer in certain emotional support pets. Like, I think dogs, sure, but a hamster, you know, if it was working for her, it was working for her. But rather than being like, all right, you have to keep that like under wraps or whatever, they made her apparently flush the hamster down the toilet.
And honestly, that's probably a better experience than riding on Spirit Air.
Right. Yeah. The hamster was like, thank you.
This is dope. Right. I mean, well, that's the thing is, yes, this woman, she called twice and was like, yo, I have an emotional support hamster. Can I bring Pebbles on board? And they said twice, yes. Then she pulled up and they're like, nah, fam, you can't bring that rat on here. And I guess she alleges that they said, well, why don't you just flush it down the toilet because you can't bring that shit on? And she tried to call a friend to pick it up. Spirit Airlines, their statement was obviously was like, we made the mistake by clearly someone told her she could bring it on when they couldn't, because that's not our policy. But they're like, but they really deny that they said anyone suggested to flush it down the toilet.
I can't imagine there was some like, let me get my manager, and the manager's like, well, you have two options. You know, I think like I could have maybe someone like was offhandedly like, I don't know, just fucking flush it down the toilet, you know, like but like I just cannot imagine that that's what they did.
Yeah.
But I do love like her being like, okay, fine, I'll do it. And then being like, well, that's the spirit.
exactly.
And or she refused to call it a spirit animal.
Right.
And so that's why she wasn't allowed
emotional
to have
support
it on.
Animal.
Emotional. Right. She was like, no, like,
because
it's emotional
TSA,
support.
TSA does allow them, that technically can be considered an emotional support animal. But man, I just don't like flying with people when they bring emotional support pets.
My
girlfriend, we have a dog, and she's like, she likes to bring it with us on airplanes. I'm like, so my Japanese side does not want to make a scene or like cause inconveniences. So like when the dog's like barking, I'm like, oh God, don't just. And we brought in the airport. It took a mad shit in the airport.
Yeah.
It was a moment. The dog literally started arching his back to shit. I lifted him up and bare hand caught the shit before it got all over the airport floor. And then I just slam dunked it in the toilet or in the garbage can and walked embarrassedly into the bathroom while
now
a bunch of people
looked
at it. Yeah. So I don't know. They stress me out.
Yeah.
But you know, that's me.
I feel like you need to know your dog is going to be able to handle it. Because I've been on a couple of flights recently where I've seen some chill-ass motherfucking dogs that can just handle it. And you gotta know that. Maybe just like load
Mine
them up
not.
With some CBD edibles before they like get on and like chill out their anxiety. But like my dog would not be able to handle my dog. Would, even though she's like a little girl who likes to be around me, like she would just be so like –
Yeah,
like just like super hyper aware of everything that's going on. It wouldn't be the best.
Yeah.
So whatever. Shout out to
we're being forced to choose between people who bring emotional support, animals on flights, and Spirit Airlines. There's like that's a tough. It was like
I mean, look,
the Super Bowl
if they,
for everybody
I don't
want
to, you know, I'm not trying to shame anybody who actually animal provides support because I get that.
Yeah.
You know what? Fuck Spirit Airlines. That's where that goes.
Yeah.
Their seats are rigid. They charge you for everything.
I just feel like there's more to this story than they asked me to flush
it. Oh, yeah. The point that they must have got to, because I'm kind of with you. I'm sure someone did say that, but it was after like 20 minutes of straight like, no, you don't fucking get it.
Yeah.
I'm like, why don't you flush it down the toilet?
Yeah, right.
And it's like, what?
That is a suggestion.
I am calling the Miami Herald.
Yeah.
But the fact that she did it. Is little.
Did she do it?
Yeah.
She
flushed the fucking thing down the toilet.
I guess the option was, right? She did try and have, I think, Andrew, you were saying someone, she did try to call a friend, right, to come pick it up, but they were hours away. So there was no way for her to make her flight and hand off Pebbles to somebody. So.
I can't imagine she was like heading to some like insanely important meeting. Like she doesn't sound like she's the type of girl who had that thing to get to. It was like be like, I'll give up my seat for, you know, someone. I don't know. If it was really her fucking support animal, she wouldn't be so quick to flush it down a toilet.
She's like, I don't have time. Yeah. I'm closing a land deal for the Rio Tinto Mining Company.
I'm cured.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.